Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, it's Clint Coons here with Anderson Business Advisors, and this is another episode of the Anderson Podcast. And on this episode, we're going to talk about passive real estate investing. Those of you listeners that have heard me before, you know that I am an active real estate investor. I love single family homes. I've built up quite a portfolio of single families around the United States. And when it comes to investing in single family homes, it's really about the market, understanding the location of which you want to invest in. Does it have what you're looking for from those properties, be it cash flow, appreciation, or maybe a combination thereof? I can't tell you how many investors that I talk to that make this common mistake. They get invested into a market with a certain expectation that it's going to have great appreciation or it's going to be great cash flow. And then it doesn't work out because they did not understand the market they were investing in. And that is not why you should be investing there. And so what I thought I would do with this podcast is bring on an individual whom I have known for 17 years in the real estate arena, in the real estate space, and he is an avid investor. He works with investors all over the country to source properties for them, to analyze the markets, to make sure that he's matching them with the appropriate types of investments that are going to help build their portfolio to get them to where they want to be. And so with that, I'd like to introduce Marco Santarelli, CEO and founder of Narada Real Estate Investments, and he's also the host of the Passive Real Estate Investing Show. I don't know if you guys have listened to this, but I have to tell you, it's on my list. It's something I listen to every time he releases a podcast episode. I highly recommend you get signed up for it so you're notified whenever he releases a new podcast. With that, Marco, how are you doing today?
Great, Clint. What an intro. Thank you so much. It's great to be on your show.
Oh, I'm glad I have you. I mean, this is something for the listeners. You weren't in on this before we got started. We were just talking. He and I keep running into each other different places, on elevators, in hallways, in hotels. We're like, we got to get reconnected and get on each other's podcasts because it's been some time since we've talked. And so finally, we're able to work it out. I think we've had this, scheduled for 7 months and things kept coming up. And we couldn't make it work.
You and I travel just so much. In fact, we were talking about that before the recording. We got to just stay home a little bit more. I'm excited to get you back on the show because I actually looked it up on our spreadsheet. And the last time I had you on was about 3 years ago. And so we're long overdue to talk about asset protection and everything that goes into it. So I'm really looking forward to getting you back on our show.
I'm looking forward to it. And I feel a little hurt. It's been 3 years. I mean, what did I do, right, to deserve that type of treatment?
Well, we'll make up for it.
Awesome. All right. So talking about single family homes, and there's so many people out there that are what they call turnkey investment providers, that they can put you into some houses in certain markets that are typically outside of your own market. So, you know, how did you get started doing this yourself? Because you live in California and I know you invest outside of California. So maybe we'll start with that.
Yeah. So this goes back to 2003, 2004. I'm here in a market that was accelerating in terms of price growth. And it got to the point where not only was it very competitive and hard to find deals, but the better deals were actually in other markets like the Midwest, the Southeast, and the Northeast. And so I had to venture out of my market and start investing 2,000 plus miles away in markets that made more sense for me at the time to achieve my investment goals. And starting from scratch, not knowing anyone, not having a system or a framework to work around, I had to create everything from scratch. So I had to build my team, and team is critically important in real estate. So I was assembling my acquisitions teams, my property managers, my inspectors, at the time, my general contractors, because a lot of it was stressed or semi-distressed and I had to fix it up. So I was more of an active investor than a passive investor. But that's really the genesis of my investing out of state. And look, I fell and bruised myself many times. I got ripped off by many people, contractors and property managers, and I made a lot of mistakes. But fortunately, A, I learned from that. And B, now I can pass those lessons on to other people, which is exactly what my investment counts is, and I do literally every day of the week. So that's how I got started as an out of state real estate investor.
That's my story as well. You realize there's better returns outside of the state in which you live. I mean, I live on the coast just like you do, and you go to the middle of the country. And I heard somebody say this the other day that I thought was rather interesting. He lives on the coast, and he said he will only invest in red states. He won't invest in blue states. He said that the numbers and just always work out better there. And I thought, well, you know what? I started looking at where I hold all my investments. And I said, yeah, there's some truth to that as far as the returns go.
Yeah, there is truth. A lot of that has to do with taxes, you know, whether property taxes or state taxes, or just the unintended consequences of policies that politicians put through that end up driving prices up. But the other thing that probably wasn't mentioned is that typically blue states have landlord, you know, tenant landlord laws that favor the tenant more so, much more so than you as the landlord. And so, you know, things are, the chips are stacked against you, it seems.
Oh, totally. There was a individual I was sitting next to on the plane just last week and a half ago. I was flying back to Washington, and this individual manages real estate in Spokane, Washington, another blue state. Yeah. And it was amazing. One of the people on the city council had proposed to change the landlord-tenant regulations in Spokane such that if you evict a tenant, you bring an unlawful detainer action against a tenant, you have to give them back all of their security deposit, plus I think it was $1,500 to find other accommodations.
Oh, geez. That's terrible.
it's insane.
Well, how many investors do you think, about this, Clint, how many investors, new investors, do you think are going to be interested in quote unquote investing in that market going forward?
That's not exactly right. Nobody's going to do it. Just like look what California. I mean, I think they're intentionally working hard to destroy the rental market there.
Yeah. Well, they're doing a good job of it.
So we figured out that we don't want to invest on the coast. And you said you've done some, you're looking around, and I'm sure you identified markets. So kind of what goes into your criteria when you're looking for properties? What should people be looking at? I mean, what do you look at?
Okay, so I'll say that's a good question, but I think I need to take you back a little bit in the sense of it's not always and only about the property. When you're investing, you really have to take a step back and take a more macro view of things, which interestingly enough, it ties into one of my 10 rules of successful real estate investing. And that is number 6, which is take a top-down approach. This is one of the mistakes I made early on is I was looking at properties. I was so fixated on the properties that everything I did, all my decisions were based on the property. But when you step back, and one of the markets, I was investing from Florida all the way up to Michigan. So I was covering many states. But I was actually actively investing in Detroit, Michigan, of all places, you know, regardless of what you think of it, good or bad or otherwise. The mistake I made early on is that I was being presented with properties that had incredible pro formas or actual cash flows because I had Section 8 tenants in them. What didn't dawn on me at the time is that if I stepped back and looked at the street and the neighborhood and the region around it and then the market too, I would have realized that maybe this wasn't such a good investment because there were a lot of burnouts on the street. There were very high crimes, terrible schools. The demographics of the tenant pool in that area was sketchy, sometimes sketchy at best. So they had little to no credit. They were always late on payments. Sometimes they missed payments. Eviction rates were higher. And so all these things play into the demographics and the neighborhood and the characteristics and everything else tied to it. So the point I'm trying to make is this. You really need to take a top-down approach when you're investing. It's not just about the property and the criteria for your property. You should always select the best real estate markets that align with your investment goals. And most investors start by analyzing properties and they have little to no regard for its location. And that's a big mistake. So the best approach is really to first choose your city or town or market based on the health of the housing market, the local economy, things that make up that local economy, such as jobs, job growth, the unemployment, population growth. Is it a market that is declining in population or increasing? And then from there, you can narrow things down to what the best neighborhoods are in terms of amenities, schools, crime, renter demand, just the general appeal and demand for the local area. And then finally, you look at the best deals within those neighborhoods with your team. And so that's what it's all about, is take a top-down approach. Don't just stay fixated on the property. Hopefully, I'm not sounding like a preacher here, but I like to take a top-down approach as opposed to just looking at the property.
What you're telling people, it sounds like, is there's a heck of a lot of work that goes into this. It's not as simple as I've seen, you know, some people do. They get on a website, and they look at the top 10 cities and think, well, that's where I want to invest. There's more to it than that. And if you're not analyzing it and you're not up on all these various factors that you just mentioned, and there's more, I know that because you have 10 different steps. We don't have time to go into all of them, but I think they can get a copy, right? Where we can, on your website, you can read about your 10 steps.
Yeah. The 10 rules are always posted on the top of the blog on both of our sites.
And people, you can see that link in the show notes. And for those that want to go right to that after this podcast, what is the address? I'm not at a computer right now.
Our main website is noradarealestate.com, N-O-R-A-D-A, noradarealestate.com. And it'll be easy to find it on from there. You just click on learn or blog at the top, and it'll take you straight there. It's the first thing you see.
Okay, so you're analyzing all this. Makes sense. And then you're defining the markets. So right now for 2020, because what I always see, what I hear from people is they're like, they'll say, well, Austin's great. I'm going to go to Austin, for instance, because it's been hot. Yeah, it has been in certain times. It was hot maybe 3 or 4 years ago was the right time to invest there. But now I think it's getting extremely hot, meaning that it's too hot for me to even consider because of what you were talking about, you know, crime, taxes, the things that make it hard to generate a return in that market. What do you see for 2020?
So with real estate, there's always opportunity out there. And what people need to realize is that the United States is made up of over 400 major metropolitan statistical areas. And these are pretty large regions. You can break them down into sub-markets, suburbs, and neighborhoods. So you'll always find opportunity if you just open your mind and you realize that there are hundreds of markets to choose from. The question is, which one makes sense today? The point of that is that all real estate is local. I mean, we've heard this time and time again, all real estate is local. Well, there's a lot of truth in that. In fact, you could even argue that all real estate is hyper-local, not just local. So knowing that, you can disconnect yourself from your local market if the local market, in other words, your backyard, doesn't make sense for you as an investor. And number two, it means that you need to be a little bit of a sleuth. You need to put on your due diligence hat and your research hat and start using tools out there, whether it be Google as a search engine or whatever, and other online tools that help you find the market. Now, there are companies, including ourselves, that do an analysis and research of, you know, the markets. I track 405 of them on a regular basis. I know which ones are appreciating, depreciating, which ones are trending in terms of employment and unemployment, population growth, and all that kind of stuff. And when you look at some facts or some data, and you don't need to be a data nerd to do this, but when you look at some basic stuff, you can start to see which markets make sense. When you look at that kind of stuff, and then you realize that a market is appealing from that perspective, from a macro perspective, and you can get inventory there, and you can assemble a team there, and this is not the last thing, but the numbers make sense there. You know, you mentioned Austin. Austin doesn't make sense as much today, if at all, as it did 5 years ago. But when you can look at a market and you say, yeah, I can get a single family home, a nice 3-bedroom single family home in a good quality neighborhood, a BB plus type neighborhood for $150,000, and I can rent it for roughly 1% of that per month. So let's call it $1,500 a month, maybe $1,400 a month. I can tell you right now, if that property is in the Midwest or the Southeast, it will cash flow well. It'll make sense. You'll be in a stable neighborhood. You'll have protection of your capital, as in your down payment. And that's the starting point. But guess what? You've probably done 70% of your due diligence by that point. So there's opportunity out there, lots of it. And 2020, I'm just as bullish on 2020 as I was on 2019. The variable that changes is where you may be investing. It's not, should I be investing in real estate or does real estate make sense? In my opinion, real estate always makes sense because people always need a place to live. It's, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We need food, shelter, clothing. Well, it's right at the bottom of that pyramid. We need shelter. And number two, we have a growing population in this country. So demand is not only there, it's increasing. And the fact is we're not creating enough housing units every single year to keep up with the growth in household formation. That means things are stacked in our favor as investors, as landlords.
All right. So what are two markets that you recommended in 2019, but you're not going to recommend in 2020 because the numbers have changed and they're just not a good market anymore per your investing criteria?
Well, I'm not going to say it's a bad market, but one that I probably have put from, if I had to categorize them as green, yellow, red. What was green and is now kind of more of a yellow, meaning that it's hard to find good deals for one of two reasons. One, lack of inventory, or two, the numbers what I'll call the rent to price or rent to value ratios have changed. The one that popped in my head as you were asking me the question is Dallas. You know, now granted, Dallas Metro is huge. So we have to be careful because there's probably a lot of areas and pockets where you can find deals if, you know, you have the right team and you know what to look for. But in general terms, from a 40,000 foot view, Dallas 5-6 years ago made a heck of a lot of sense. There was lots of inventory. You could buy 3-bedroom homes for 100 to 150,000. They all rented for roughly about 1%, sometimes more of that. And it was just a phenomenal market, but it's been red hot since about 2012. That's when it really started to pick up. And because of that, inventory levels have dropped and the numbers don't make as much sense. So Dallas is one of those markets. We really haven't dropped any markets from last year as of yet. We're still in Atlanta, which is really, really hard to get inventory in. We're still in Dallas, which again is hard to get inventory in. So it's not that we've given up on those markets. It's just tough to get inventory. But we're opening up new markets. Like we're opening up Baltimore, and I don't want anyone to react with a knee-jerk reaction saying, oh, that's a crime capital of America. What you hear in the media happens within a 2-square-mile radius. It's just like Compton, you know, in California, Compton in the Los Angeles County. What you hear about gang activity happens within a 2-square-mile area. But there's tons of opportunity in the Baltimore metro area, and the numbers are actually more appealing than many of the markets that we're in right now.
Yeah, you know, that's funny you say that. A couple months ago, we were looking at a multifamily. Went to the auction, and I think we were willing to go as high as 650 on it because it was a completely gutted building, and you're going to have to put in, I don't know, probably, I think our numbers as high as we'd go would be a mil to do the rehab on it. Wouldn't you know it, that property went for $1.3 million, $1.4 million. I was shocked.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, how are you going to make any money at that? And I was talking to my partner, and he goes, man, we lost that one. I said, no, we'll get that one. Because in 5 years, when that note comes due for those guys that bought that property and they can't afford to pay it, we'll come in and pick it back up and all the work's been done for us.
Yeah.
you know, you can get these. You're right. Baltimore can be a great area. We saw the opportunity there ourselves. That was just one mistake that some investor made because they wanted property so bad that they're willing to pay crazy amounts for it. But I see what you're saying. It is all market data driven when it comes to making the investments. And so when you go out there, I assume that, you know, you're finding the team, because that's always the problem with investing out of state. People don't want to put their money into a Baltimore. I mean, my first concern, you just brought up crime. You're going to put me in a property that's going to get busted into. Two, I'm not going to have stable tenants, potentially. Three, how do I know I'm going to have a property manager that isn't going to be stealing from me? What have you done to address those issues, or the property management issues for people?
Well, I mean, having been in business for 16 years now, doing what we do today, you know, you build relationships over the years. You get to know who are the strong, good, quality players, and you work with them and you build your relationship, and, you know, we're comfortable referring them. So we vet these people. We vet providers. I mean, you know, we love working with you guys at Anderson. You guys are quality. You know, you put out good service, and we hear that feedback from our clients. And so we are happy to continue recommending people like yourselves. So when you deal with a service provider that's doing a crappy job, guess what? You have a conversation with them. Maybe you slap them on the wrist and you give them a fair warning. But at some point, you cut the tie. You let them go, fire them, whatever. That doesn't happen too often, fortunately. But I guess just relationships that you build over the years and being in the industry for so long, you hear the good players, you hear the bad players, you know who's, like, you know, skipping town or leaving the country for whatever reason. But yeah, it starts with vetting them, and then they prove themselves through time and feedback and the relationship that you build. And you keep those people and you get rid of the bad ones.
With your business, you actually can source properties for people, right?
That's one of the many value-add services. You know, I like to say that we provide the knowledge, the resources, and the property so people can build their real estate portfolio and invest successfully. So the knowledge we provide is all free. It's just like you doing this podcast. You're putting out great content and you're educating people. The resources are all the pieces of the puzzle that we provide, whether it be a company like yours that's doing asset protection, the lenders that we work with, the property managers, all that kind of stuff. And last but not least are the properties, because you don't necessarily start with the properties, but at the end of the day, that's ultimately what you're investing in are the properties, you know, the rental properties that are in the different markets. So tying those three things together is really the service we provide, and at no cost. I mean, we don't charge our services to clients. You know, it's a free value-added service that we provide. But yeah, properties and the people, those are the two things that make this business work. It's the people and the properties.
So if I came to you, what type of criteria would you be looking at? You know, because I don't know exactly where I want to invest. All I know is that I want to get a 10 cap on my properties. I mean, how do you go through the process of helping an investor who they know they want to be involved in real estate, but they just don't know where to go or what to look for?
The answer to that question is really that everything always starts with a strategy session. That's what we call it. You know, it's free. It's anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour, depending on the complexity of and the questions of the person. We'll be the first to tell someone we can't help them because of their situation, whether it's, you know, lack of capital, poor credit, unrealistic expectations, someone coming to us saying, hey, I'm looking for properties with A, seller financing, or B, you know, a 15% cap rate. Well, good luck with that. You know, like, let's be realistic here. Fortunately, that doesn't happen too often. But at the end of the day, having an intelligent, objective, rational conversation that could go for 60 minutes or more will really help us to pull out your investment criteria and your investment goals out of the person's head and lay out a roadmap to say, okay, based on what you're trying to do and achieve it within this time period, then here's what we suggest. And we can make recommendations in terms of markets, the number of properties, where those properties should be or could be, what kinds of cash flow you can expect from it, what kinds of cap rates you can expect from those markets. Some people are very focused on cash flow. They're just looking for income. Some people are on the other end of that spectrum, and they're looking for capital growth. They want as much equity growth or appreciation as possible in the shortest time possible because they're looking to leverage up that equity over the next 3, 5, 7 years. Everybody's different. Everybody's on a different point on that spectrum. And so it really starts with that conversation. Then from the conversation, we can put the facts on the table and lay out a roadmap. And then that gives us clarity, gives both of us clarity as to where they should be looking, what they should be looking for or at, and how they can proceed. And really, that's the answer to your question. But, you know, there's tangents that spin off of that. For example, someone coming from, let's say, Washington or California might be what I call equity rich and cash flow poor. And what that means is that these people are sitting on a fair amount of equity, whether it's in their principal residence or more than likely in one or more properties that they own in these expensive, somewhat overpriced markets. But guess what? If you could tap into that equity and literally move it, not spend it, but move it to other markets and build a larger portfolio that increases your cash flow and increases your cash on cash return. And over time, probably, potentially, but probably increases your net worth, your equity, because now you have more property, but in markets that are going to be performing better. Well, guess what? You've just hit the ball out of the park. So a lot of people don't even know they're sitting on that potential. But until we have that conversation with them, that strategy session, they don't know what they're capable of doing. So it's okay. Come to us with questions and you don't need a plan. We're going to help you build that plan.
So when you talk about the equity in the existing properties, or let's say I didn't even have equity, one of the things that I go through a lot with people is I show them, you know, if you had 300 grand, how many properties could you buy if the average property is $150,000? And I use it in a different context, using with retirement plans. And most people think, well, you can buy two. And then you show them that if you leverage them down, you can actually obtain up to 10 properties with that $300,000 if you're using money the right way. But the question people say is, like, well, who's going to give me the loans? How am I going to finance a property in Maryland? And I live in California. Do I go down to my local bank? So do you have lenders you work with? Is this one of those things that if I came to you and you're going to tell me, all right, Clint, here's a strategy. And then call these lenders here. We work with them. We vetted them and they can help you put this deal together.
Yeah, Clint, I don't know what you think of that saying, quote unquote, one-stop shop. I've never been a fan of that. I really try not to use it, but it is fair to say that you can consider like our organization, our company, a one-stop shop because we have, I called them resources before, but if I broke that down, it would be the lenders, and those are conventional lenders, portfolio lenders. They're even self-directed IRA lenders. So it's a whole slew of different types of lenders that are available to investors. So that resource is there. The property management is there, the property managers in the different markets, the title companies, the home inspectors, the appraisers, the asset protection attorneys, the CPAs and tax advisors. Like all those resources, those people are there for us to put you in touch with and refer you to. So I don't like that term one-stop shop, but really, if you think about it, we're like the hub of a wheel, and everybody that we work with, all these service providers, are on the spokes of that wheel. And so we can provide you all those things. And that's what we do. I mean, but at the end of the day, look, if you want to use your own lender, fine, go for it. We may caution you if you're going to Wells Fargo or Bank of America, they're not the best places to go for investment loans for non-owner occupied. But legally, we can't say don't, but we will make some recommendations for you.
That's the key thing, is when you're buying non-owner occupied property, rental real estate, having a lender that understands the numbers and your personal tax return, if you already own some investment properties, is crucial.
Yeah.
I see this time and time again that investors struggle. They're, I can't get a loan for this property. And, you know, they don't like my tax return and they don't understand why that is. Well, one, yeah, maybe you're taking the, you're putting information on your return you shouldn't be, or you need to change the way it hits your return to make the lender feel more comfortable. But B, which is typically the main problem, is the lender that they've selected, that they're just not experienced. Right before we started the podcast today, I was responding to an email from a longtime client of mine, her and her husband, very successful in California. They have a house with over $2 million equity in it, personal residence. And they were thinking about doing a home equity line of credit because they wanted to, you know, just make the property appear as if there's less equity available, because he's a doctor and they were concerned that, you know, somebody might say, oh, let's go after him. And Bank of America said, oh yeah, we want all this information before we can consider not whether or not we'll give you this loan, but you also need to go through home ownership counseling in order to get a HELOC.
No way.
Yeah.
I mean, that is hilarious.
Maybe that works with the millennial snowflake crowd out there. Oh, I get counseling and I'm feeling really good about myself. But I tell you what, that's offensive. Somebody that, and these people are active investors. Yeah.
Yeah, that is offensive. That, I mean, that's terrible. Yeah. I've never had a lot of luck with, you know, the major banks, particularly B of A, and I'll single them out. You know, I'm not afraid to say it.
Mm-hmm. No, you just get yourself in trouble there. I mean, they'll string you along until to the end, they'll tell you, hey, we can't do this deal. And you're like, well, I have closing in a week and the seller won't give you an extension on it.
Yeah, it happens.
You know, so if somebody wanted to get a hold of you and they wanted to talk about investing in different markets across the country, what is the best way for them to reach out to you?
We have a team of six investment counselors. We probably speak to about 600 investors a year easily. We're probably placing them with a little over 400 properties a year right now. So, you know, we do a fair amount of volume. It's more than one a day. The best place to start, like I said before, is just to have that free strategy session. If nothing else, you'll get questions answered and you'll walk away with an education. But just go to the website, fill out the form, just say, hey, I have questions, or I'm interested in investing, or I'm interested in this market, whatever it is, just put in, you know, a subject line and some notes, and you'll be connected to one of my team and they'll schedule a call with you and away you go. That's really the starting point. In fact, that's the best place to start, because it starts with knowledge and education and answering questions.
Okay, great. And we'll have that link in the show notes. So you want to go there, get a strategy session. There's no cost. Marco's team will give it to you for free. So then you can get an idea of what markets are performing, where you should be looking at for investing in 2020 if you're into single family. But you do more than single family, though.
Yeah, so 80% of the investment property that our clients purchase are single family homes. It's just the most abundant property type out there. The other 20% are made up of what I'll call duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes. And often those are going to be new construction as opposed to newly refurbished, or what we'll call turnkey. So that's the product mix. And occasionally there are some other opportunities that come along, you know, more passive type investments like a real estate syndication, or what a lot of people refer to as a group investment. But most of it's single family, Clint. I mean, that's really just what we offer. I don't know why I didn't think about this before. If I may throw this out, I know you have a great book. I highly recommend your book. I have it on my bookshelf here. And, you know, I figured it's about time that I publish one too. So not only am I releasing a book come April, but I'm actually giving it away for free. So if anyone's interested in that, all they have to do is just download the free report that's on our website. It's the same title as the book. It's going to be called Passive Real Estate Investing. And come April, everyone will get an announcement and they can download. It'll be paperback and a download. So it'll be free to all.
Oh, nice. Great. So if they go to your site, passiverealestateinvesting.com, they can download that free ebook, or at least get on the list so they'll receive it, correct?
Yeah, they can go to either website, passiverealestateinvesting.com or the first website we talked about, the mothership, if you will, noradarealestate.com. So anybody who downloads that ultimate guide to passive real estate investing is put on the list, and they'll be notified with an email saying, hey, the book has been released. You know, click here to download it.
Marco, thank you. I know we're out of time. It's always been a pleasure speaking with you. We got to make this a little more current rather than every 3 years. Okay.
I agree. I agree. We will, so, for sure.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Clint. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.